And welcome to the Elephant TV. My name is Joe Kubuthi. Today I'll be speaking to Dr. Abraham Rugo. Dr. Rugo is the county manager for international budget partnerships based here in Nairobi, Kenya. Karibu Dr. Rugo to the Elephant.
Asante sana. Thanks for having me, Joe.
So just to start this conversation, Dr. Rugo, so a bit of analysis about agriculture. So, I mean, agriculture has been deemed the backbone of Kenya's economy. 30 to 40% of the GDP comes from the agricultural sector. It employs 70% of people in rural Kenya, which is a majority of population. About 40% looking at the whole labor market, and. Since 2010, when we passed the constitution, agriculture became a devolved function. So you're finding now in different counties leading their own agricultural implementation of still policy, which still happens at the national level. The last 10 years, with the teething problems of devolution, one of the things has been on transferring functions to the county. And one of the functions that has been fought outside of health has been agriculture. And some counties saying we don't have enough money to still do extension services. The national government should do much more. As someone who has been an insider, really looking at devolution, what has been your take around this, in particular towards the agricultural sector?
Thank you so much. One of the things that we need to also to appreciate is that with the devolved system of government, the intention was fairly noble. Devolution, the whole principle around devolution is that you take decision making and service delivery to levels that are closest to where the need is. In other words, in theory, you should be able to match needs to policy priorities in a way that reduces translation errors, if I may use that word, to the largest extent possible. And therefore you take that it is not possible for an officer sitting in Kilimo House to give the right policy prescription and response to a livestock farmer in Mandera County. Or to a groundnut farmer in Nyamira, or to a whole nut or whatever you call it, a cashew nut farmer in Kwale or in Kilifi. And therefore, that was the essence of devolution. Now, at the center of it, you appreciate that, as you've just said, for a sector that controls. And I think later on we may want to speak about this. When we talk about the agriculture sector, I think it is important for us to appreciate that to use the right nomenclature, use the right terms, because that sector, is very wide right now. It has agriculture, it has rural development, it has urban development, and even housing is in that general sector, if we are to use those sectors of the national government. But let's focus on agriculture, where we basically are talking about crop and livestock, and a bit of fisheries, if I may. So devolution was supposed to help in improving the policy responses to the needs. And what are the needs? The needs are largely, in my opinion, the needs were largely three. One is being able to help in production of food for consumption, for local consumption. Two is to be able to produce for export. In other words, as an income earner, as a foreign income earner to other countries. And three, for employment creation, which technically also means as a national income earner. Now, locally, because what happens is that when you employ people, then they pay taxes. And when they pay taxes, government makes money. The export one just gives you largely foreign. So that division of functions between the national government and county governments was supposed to have to make that possible. In other words, you have one who makes policy across board, across countries. So for instance, when we are negotiating with Malaysia on what we can export to them, it becomes a national government and not a county by county kind of negotiation. To be able to have a uniform policy. When you think about the training of agricultural extension officers, then again that is managed at that particular level. But the question, as you have asked it, is what has been the effect of this? Is that one is that yes, you have a semblance of transfer of functions, and when I say a semblance, is that you have every county now has a department, or a ministry, or a county executive committee member in charge of agriculture. So you will find that title across board. Two, every county allocates some money to be spent in a sector, in a department for agriculture. So does the national government allocate. The big question, which I think is what we'll spend a bit more time on, is how much of the coordination around the three areas I have just talked about is happening. Are they allocating sufficient resources for that purpose? And three, is it becoming actually a source of income for households beyond just feeding their tummies, and feeding their tummies with only what is available? I think I'll start it there.
Okay, thanks for that introduction, Dr. Tazi. Moving the conversation forward, I think you're probably the next question. As we speak, we have this conversation, 3.5 million Kenyans are at risk of, not at risk, actually are starving, right? According to humanitarian reports. Of course, largely across Northern Kenya, Upper Coast ETC, but then because of, we have had poor rains for the last 3 years. And I think this goes back to that conversation where there are conversations around there's food insecurity in these areas, yet a lot of the conversations now within the policy spaces and media spaces, there's at least a bit of a blame game between national and counties, where parts of the national are saying, but it's the counties who provide food security, TC. So where is the missing link between what's really happening and this actually national role to actually mitigate some of this? Because I think we're actually staring at a food security issue, and this guy has actually shown us that, listen, this, how we are doing this is not there's something incongruent in how we are doing this. Secondly to that, just to add on to that, is also tied to that is also, if you look at our numbers, we're now talking about Ukraine, the Ukraine-Russia war, and we get a lot of wheat from there. Kenya, if you look at our numbers now, we actually use more wheat. Kenyan households consume more chapati than they do maize, according to, if you look at our, so where is that link? Because this crisis also elucidates something systemic that is not happening, or that is happening or hasn't been addressed properly.
Thank you. Now, one of the things that now let me go back a bit to the devolution idea. The devolution idea was that national government will be responsible for those things that have got multiplier effect or externalities, as it were. So, in other words, when you think about crop production policy, so there are certain standards that any maize production must adhere to. And that's what the national government was supposed to do. For instance, if it's meat production, it doesn't matter whether you are keeping your cows in Mandera, or you're keeping them in Nyamira, or you're keeping them in Kajiado. There are certain standards of quality for hides and skins, for instance. There are certain standards for livestock, meat, weight of the animal, and things like that. If then you are going to be, first of all, ensure that first of all, the food is clean for consumption, but also for export, it meets the standards. So national government was supposed to do that. County governments, on the other hand, were supposed to be, if I may, to be the people on the ground, facilitating the actual production. And when you look at the constitution, I was just reading it this morning. When you look at Schedule 4 of the constitution, it talks about functions and the powers of county are, it's number one, agriculture, including crop and animal husbandry, livestock sale yards, county abattoirs, plant and animal disease control, and fisheries. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other things that are related to them, for instance, things like water management, animal control and welfare, control of food quality and things like that. So you see that on one hand, we expected to have a general overview picture, but on the but what is happening? A lot of the devolution has happened on paper, but not in practice. We still see a lot of functions. When you read the sector report for agriculture, within those six sectors, six sectors, and the key ones being State Department for Livestock, the State Department for Agriculture, and the State Department for Fisheries, Aquaculture, and the Blue Economy. When you read those three especially, mm-hmm. it's almost word for word what county governments are supposed to be doing. And when you look at their allocations, it's still significant. Now, what then that means is that there is, first of all, a mismatch in terms of who is supposed to be doing what. And then secondly, and you saw this very clearly when there was when the locusts came, you know, there was a lot of confusion about who is in charge of chasing the locusts and making sure. And you know, there are those very many hilarious statements, including that they will die of not, you know, they will disappear, they will just die, they will die of old age. We shouldn't be so troubled. So there's that mismatch of who is supposed to be doing what, and therefore, two things happen when you have a situation like that. One, because already our constitution provides that functions. Finances were supposed to follow functions. So what happened is that when you have not transferred certain functions, including of production, of marketing, you know, the constitution says very clearly when it talks about sale yards, basically it's talking about marketing of product of agricultural products. Right. When that is still being done by the national government, then it means that they are the ones who remain with the resources, with the funds, with the monies. To perform this function, and therefore counties do not necessarily allocate what is sufficient. And anyway, counties have a bit of a constraint. So there's first of all that the money does not get allocated for purpose. Secondly, it also means that there's nobody who can be held responsible when things go wrong. Because first of all, they are not targets. They are not targets, for instance, of saying, if we are producing maize, how much maize should we be producing? I mean, you rightly say it. A lot of the food that we consume is actually imported. It's not produced here. We import maize, for instance, we import maize and beans from Uganda. Yet when you look at the conditions, the climatic conditions around where maize and beans is produced in Kenya is the same as the same conditions on the side of Uganda, because it's all around the Lake Victoria Basin. Yet when you look at some of the, when we import fruits and things like that from Israel, yet we have better places and conditions. So that, because there's nobody being held responsible. But my hunch is also the fact that this is also a mix of bad business and politics. And what I mean by bad business and politics is that you deliberately destroy certain industries. You know, you destroy the sugar industry, for instance, you know. 8, if not 10, of the parastatals within the State Department for Crop Production are in the sugar industry. You know, Muhoroni, Nzoia, all these guys, Mumias and all of you. But you import the sugar and make sure that those companies are run down. And who benefits from this importation of sugar? There's a business that is important. It's been this. You import as basic as eggs, you know, fertilized eggs for chicks. I mean, you know, for instance, some of the companies do not necessarily produce those eggs. They just do they are just almost like a logistics company. What we call agriculture, you know, crop and livestock companies are actually, you know, just a logistics company moving, you know, eggs from, from Vietnam, from Malaysia, from China, and then bringing. So I feel that, especially on that last point, that's where, you know, the rain completely has beaten us. So when a drought comes, there's no buffer. Because then the buffer is being calculated from the point of where can we import this food for. Mm-hmm. Go to NCPBD, NCPB, the National Cereals and Produce Board. Right. It's supposed to be the custodian of any, not, but technically of all surplus production.
Mm.
The drama that occasions, you know, NCPB, either the time when there is time for harvesting and time for drying maize, they have no money to buy maize.
Mm.
Or they are buying, you know, at 2/3 the market price. And therefore, farmers are willing to just hold back. You know, so it's a mixture. But the central one for me is this lack of coordination between what the national government is doing and what the county government is doing. So that when you see what counties have been doing, like, you know, fruit processing plants, I've seen a number of counties, Kitui, Makueni, I think those are the ones that I have heard. What they are doing around that space has very little connection with the overall national policy, if any, you know, on value addition for crop production. And therefore, what then that means is that there is no production that is being done at large scale for the society. A lot of the production is at small scale for household consumption.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So I have a small garden behind me. I plant my own maize. I plant my own... and all this, by the way, all this local production is all rain-fed agriculture. It's all dependent on the rain. So when the rains did not come, the last 2 years, we have had a lot of, you know, hits and misses on rain. Rain has come at the wrong time, before either after people have planted or too early before people have planted. Yet when you see across the world where large-scale production for the population happens, a lot of it is mechanized, a lot of it is irrigation assisted, and therefore it does not depend on the weather conditions, because the weather conditions, if you had to wait for it, I mean, Turkana County, I was there 2 weeks ago, it rained 2 weeks ago, they told us it was raining when I was there, but they say this is raining after about 8-9 months of no dot, of no drop of rain. Yet the same place when you irrigate, you actually can have a full cycle of productivity.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to go around by saying that it's a mix of uncoordination, lack of responsibility and accountability, money being allocated for the, not being allocated, but also, as I have said, you know, a lot of emphasis on importation as opposed to local production. Mm.
So you've talked about, I mean, one issue you're raising is the issue of lack of coordination. And also you've talked about also, you know, bad business practice where there's almost sabotage and subterfuge, you know, within the agricultural sector. But my question is that isn't agriculture, should it not be, this conversation will talk about policy and practice, but agriculture is a very, very local, activity that actually influences and affects people on the ground. So how then do you link this conversation on, you know, this conversation on policy, which to many seems very abstract, you know, it's something in the air, to the actual doing of what, of feeding people and doing the agriculture? How then, what is the missing link? Is it a problem of the constitution? Is it a problem of, is it sabotage of regimes that have come after 2010 was passed, that makes that this link hard to find between actually just policy governing, but also creating an environment whereby the counties can actually do their work.
Mm-hmm. No, thanks. Thanks, Joe. It's interesting you asked that, and allow me to try and explore a broader answer for you now. For the longest that I know is that agriculture, as we talk about it, has never been discussed, at least from a policy perspective, as a source of income, as a business, as a productive sector that basically can be able to empower. A lot of it has been talked of as a backbone. Backbone basically meaning feeding households. I don't think the backbone has been from a point of, you know, I mean, really, backbone is a very central part of the body of a human being. And the backbone of an economy is very central. Right now, if you ask me, I think the backbone of Kenya's economy is not agriculture, it's financial services. It's the one thing that if you removed, things will collapse. From where I sit, because of the kind of, you know, the number of people it employs and all that. So agriculture, when you look at even the reasons why there has been low productivity over the years, you know, I was just looking at the agriculture sector report. When you see the, some of the things that they quote as being the challenges in those, why it's not realizing its full potential, you find that the reasons given are still at a very, how would I put it, at a very basic level of why things are not going the way they should be going. There was a missing, for instance, because the rains delayed, because the investments is still low, the amount of money basically being put in is still does not match the need. So you find a lot of it has very little to do with what you would call employment or income generation per se. But let me come to the specifics. Now, when you talk about government role in agriculture, because that is where the crux of the matter are, the government's role in agriculture is largely around critical areas. One of technical input, technical expertise. Now, in this country, that is supposed to be provided by what we call agriculture extension officers, or basically extension services. Now, extension services are both for livestock and crop production, and even fisheries and aquaculture and now apiculture, you know, with bees. Now, a lot of the counties we are talking about, even at the national, before even counties came into being at the national level, the last time we had any recruitment for agricultural, for extension services, I think is almost 20 years ago. I think if you walked around any county and asked who are the extension officers, you'll find it's people who are now retiring. You know, my dad was an extension officer, and I remember him telling me for a long time, he was in charge of almost a whole division. Now a whole division has, you know, 1,000 plus farmers. How will you be able to go to each of those farmers advising them on, you know, best practices, organizing agriculture demonstration centers and services? So that is a big area of policy, if you ask me, that has been missing. The second one has to do with when you produce, where does your produce go? And that is connected to the fact that people are waking up and deciding it is better to clear my coffee farm and divide it into plots and sell to guys who will basically come or put up rentals than to continue keeping this coffee. Because one, the work is intensive or extensive even, but the income, the return on investment for the household is still very, very low. So because the marketing, the production does not necessarily bring returns to me, then people then embark on, let's produce just for ourselves, and then the rest basically don't bother. But thirdly, is something that is written to is more historical and located around diet, and that largely across this country, people eat what is locally available. There's no diversity in their menu, as it were. And diversity means, you see, what diversity would mean is that if I predominantly live in a maize-producing area, I should be able to access other types of crops, or you know, that to add to my diet. I know people who have never eaten fish, because where they live, and you remember the conversation in 2008, President Uhuru Kenyatta was the Minister for Finance, when he introduced the economic stimulus program. And one of the things they were going to do basically was going to support the establishment of fish ponds in Central Province. A big area, big discovery found there is that there are people who had never eaten fish, because first, they don't consider fish to be something that some even call it a snake. In the vernacular, it's even more, the language is even more harsh. So because of that lack of diversity, it means that the consumption is very localized. Is not there's no profit in doing it, because if everybody around you just eats what comes from, you know, what is produced locally, it means every shop, you know, you go to Kambani during the mango production area, every farm has mangoes, and therefore the price is 5 cents per mango, if not less. So there's nothing you will make, because the supply chain, the product, the consumption is only localized to that particular level. But I think it will also be wrong not to talk about the fact that a lot of what makes it, in rural spaces, yes, I have explained, but also a lot of what makes it to urban areas as the food we buy is also very cartelized, if I may use that word.
Right.
You know, it's controlled. What you and I eat in the city is very controlled by the people who bring it, and even at the price, it will arrive here. I have just given the example of the mango. I was shocked when I visited a family member in one of the, beginning of January, when mangoes were in season.
Right.
And she explained to me the way those mangoes are bought. Some of them are bought at less than 10 cents. If you do the cumulative, you know, because they are told they sell by bag. You know, a bag may have 1,000 mangoes. They sell them for 500 bob. Do your math, you know, it comes to almost about, you know, less than 5 shillings. That same mango, you get it for 20 bob, you get it for 30 bob. Sometimes you get it even for 40 bob. So because of that, then it means that even with the good intentions of people who want to produce more, you still find that there's nothing they are making out of it. So the following year, some even just decide these mangoes are a waste of time. So I forget about them. If the tree produces, fair and good, but I'm not going to put my effort. So there's that lack of policy coherence, as I've said.
Right.
The support for actual, and you've talked, it's a very local process. You know, if there is no extension services coming to help you, it becomes, the last one is the question of inputs. Now, a lot of the inputs are not local inputs. These are inputs that are either it's animal feeds, it's fertilizer for production, it's AI, artificial insemination, the kind of seeds and the quality of those seeds. It's about farm mechanics in terms of tractors, in terms of milking machines and all that. Now, a lot of them are super expensive.
Right.
I mean, you try do any dairy farming, you will just come, you know, it's almost anybody who is in that space basically talks of losses. Now, across the world, governments intervene by making subsidies for their farmers so that they can produce massive, in large scale, and they can be compensated when the consumption does not match production. So that a farmer in Germany, a farmer in France does not incur losses because they produced milk that was not consumed.
Right.
They have that covered, and therefore they're able to continue. So it's a mix of all those things. But at the end of it is that when policy is being driven by people who also have business interest, in my opinion.
Right.
And that's why you see a lot of this focus on importation, even of things we produce.
And actually picking on that, because we're going to just tie this conversation down as we conclude, I think my last question then, Dr. Rugo, then, how do we democratize the agricultural sector? Because I think you're touching, because even you talk about policy, you're saying their interests, talking about your mangoes, there's someone who brings them from, you know, at a certain price. How do we democratize the agricultural, the backbone really of Kenya's economy? How do we democratize it?
One is what I would say might be a bit radical, but I think, first of all, I still think there's a whole place of cooperative societies that we know, and they are there and they are formed. They still play a very key role. But the second thing is that I think it is time to start exploring land consolidation. I do not think that we can advance productivity as we want it with the kind of subdivisions that we have seen happening in many places. And therefore, cooperatives can help, in my opinion, to help. It's not necessarily that you're giving up your land, but what you're doing is that then the land is consolidated. And as I've said, this is a bit radical because it can generate a lot of negative emotions. So that then we are able to produce together as a large scale, as opposed to small pieces of production that do not add up. I think there is still space for that. Secondly, I believe that by counties speaking on their competitive edges and the areas of their of higher potential that they have, they should start putting investments in those areas. Now, this will require a lot of push even through the Senate and through the National Assembly, because I think we are still spending far much more money, far much for functions at the national level that should actually be at the county level. I do not see any other way, because unless, I don't think the constitution is a miss, in my opinion. I think how we implement it is what is critical. And a big area will be to say that these functions are not functions that should remain at the national level. They need to go to the county, to the county level. But thirdly, is that I think that agriculture needs to become a critical aspect of what a government is being held to account for. And that indeed should be for anything that accounts for more than 5% of the economic activity of this country. You know, so that then it becomes that area where we scrutinize every penny and shilling. It's not just a sector among many other sectors.
Right.
So we are not putting agriculture against security. You know, we are putting agriculture on its own pedestal. And countries that have developed have had to pick a thing, whether it's manufacturing, whether it is, you know, service industry or financial services, and give it the due attention it deserves. Thank you so much.